And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today we have with us Judy Converse. Judy holds a master's degree in public health nutrition from the University of Hawaii and a bachelor's degree in food science and human nutrition from the University of Vermont. Her life changed in 1996 with the birth of her son, who was challenged for growth, feeding, and developmental pattern from birth. Not being able to find the help that she needed to support her child's care through the medical professionals, Judy embarked in a quest for answers. 3 books later, in a busy private practice plus numerous speaking engagements in venues like the Autism Research Institute, U.S. Autism and Asperger's Association, and the National Autism Association, Judy still finds times to educate the public. She does this through her blog, nutritioncare.net, and through radio interviews like this one, where Judy is joining us all the way from Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Judy. How are you today? Thank you so much for joining us at Lifestyle Improvement.
I'm fine. My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Fantastic. So you have written 3 books, and we will touch upon your book, specifically Special Need Kids Eat Right, in a few minutes. But you are also a specialist in what is called functional wellness nutrition. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that subject?
Sure. So basically, it means that everybody gets to function really well and feel well. And there's health, which we kind of almost have more of a health scare system than a health care system, because it works great for when we have emergencies and we need surgeries and we have all this wonderful technologies. But for really feeling well and really functioning and having energy and sleeping well and functioning well, having all the cognitive ability you want, it can be not so great. So this is where nutrition really can come in, and you can really use foods and supplements and herbs to really work for you to dial that way up. And that's not something that you will usually find if you're talking to your garden variety primary care doc or a dietitian, even in a hospital. That's not their training, and they can choose to expand if they want on into that, but typically it's not required and it's not covered as well on insurance. It can be, but it's a little bit tricky.
So functional wellness nutrition, I would think then, using what you just said, your definition, and then those 3 words. So nutrition that makes you feel well and helps you be functional. Is that another way of maybe putting it?
Exactly. So you're literally functioning at your potential. You're not just kind of getting through every day. You're actually feeling pretty well and really functioning at potential.
And food can do that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Food can do that, and food can tear that down. It's either you can eat food that does either or.
And that is exactly why we have you here today, because we want to hear and learn a little bit more about that. How about expanding a little bit more on your specific role related to nutrition at a level of a private practice?
So I get really investigative when I work with my patients. And I usually, since I'm mostly working with kids, so anywhere from young infants up to age 20 or 24 years old. And I'm not the first person people want to talk to, because changing what you eat and your kitchen and how you shop and cook, that's a pain in the rear end. A lot of people, I mean, it's usually, we're very protective about our food and what we love. So I am meeting families when they're at their wit's end and they're very desperate and their children have failed with usual measures from a gastroenterologist or a dietitian or a pediatrician or whatever. So in my practice, it's really doing a very thorough nutrition assessment. I have the ability to request some labs. I work under an authorizing physician, and I can order some as a licensed dietitian nutritionist. And usually there's labs that nobody ever thought of doing, and we get some really good juicy pieces of information that can really change these kids' lives. And it doesn't matter if they're really low functioning with a disability or not. What I'm after is they feel really well, they can learn, they can improve, they can sleep. A lot of these these kids don't sleep well. They can have normal eliminations. A lot of these kids have horrible GI issues, and they can start to do some really normal things and just have fun and actually be kids. So it's that difference. It's really investigating where are the little missing pieces. And nutrition and food is such a concerto. It's not a single flute solo. I mean, you have so many moving parts.
Right.
And it does take a lot of time to assess all that. And that's not something most any physician is even trained to do or has time to do. And that's what I get to do.
Do you find that medical doctors reach out to you to get information about a child's nutrition?
No. Okay. Unfortunately, I don't. I truly don't. The ones who do are the ones who I think are more the boots on the ground. And I'll hear from sometimes teachers. I mean, they can't technically make a referral, but they may call and inquire, what do you do? I have students really needing help in the classroom. They can't focus. They can't read. Occupational therapists, physical therapists, nurse practitioners, more people who tend to spend more time with these little patients and see their struggles kind of firsthand. Mm-hmm. It's maybe that's the issue. It's a time issue. It's bandwidth. Like, do you have the available bandwidth to even think about this? Because it is a little bit complex. Once in a while, a pediatrician will reach out, or a GI doctor, but it's less often.
Tell me, how common are nutritional problems for kids that have special needs? And what are some of the chronic conditions that you find?
This is really big. So generally, there are data that show about 60% of these kids have a pretty big nutrition deficit. So that's pretty alarming in that you have to, in order for that to show up on a lab test, I mean, you have to have had that deficit for quite a while, because a lot of these reference ranges are somewhat wide, not all of them. When you look at lab tests and you see all these little numbers and they have reference ranges for what's normal, these ranges are somewhat wide. So for a child to actually fall out, that means that's been a problem for a long time. Mm-hmm. So to say 60% of these kids are showing up like that, I'm sure there's a much larger number of these kids who are teetering on the edge, or nobody even ever looked. Mm-hmm. And I have actually, in 17 years in my practice, I've actually never found a child with no nutrition problems. Mm-hmm. Anything from their mineral status is poor, or iron status is poor, really simple things like that, on up to causes for some really terrible digestive issues. And usually no one looks. There's not enough investigation. Some very surface labs will get done. They'll look normal, and the parents are sent home with medications that might mask symptoms for a while, but then they usually stop working. And in the meantime, these kids have gotten sicker, really. They get less functional.
This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuke practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
And in the meantime, these kids have gotten sicker, really. They get less functional.
Right. And you've touched upon this a little bit, but why should this matter for parents?
It really matters. I think I always tell parents, trust your instinct. If you're looking at your child and you're thinking, okay, this does not feel right to me, I know there's more to the story, then absolutely, you are the boss. You are the boss. End of story. And my hat is off always to any parent that tells me, I just have a feeling I need to look at this. So usually you are right as a parent. It's really important for parents to know this because their kids may be so much more able than you could imagine. You might get so much more functional ability out of a child, and the younger the better. I mean, you could be saying this is the difference between a life in assisted living facility or a life with some independence if you start really early. And literally, I have seen these things happen. So it's super important, even though it's usually the last thing people want to look at because parents in this boat are really exhausted and they don't want to deal with these things. It can be tremendously rewarding because it can be so worth it to really change gears on how you might think about the kind of wellness mm-hmm. of your child.
So give me an example of one of those chronic conditions that you feel mm-hmm. that you could make, based on your knowledge base, a big difference.
Well, in terms of a disability, autism is a really big one. And of course, extremely concerning now in the US. There's one researcher from MIT who's predicted by 2050, every other child in the US will have autism, and we will have a population of disabled people. And the Social Security funding in the US is already about to go bankrupt from what I've been reading. So, and this is just staggering. So anything that can be done to diminish the negative impacts of that, you have to do. And the sooner the better. I have seen kids shed an autism diagnosis. I have seen them turn around, start talking, go be with their typical peers, attend school, ski, ride bikes. And these are children I met who were really low-functioning, nonverbal kids. This doesn't always happen, and this is not to say this is the only thing they need, but I really firmly believe that all kids with that diagnosis probably have something nutritional or gastrointestinal or immune that can be enhanced so they function and feel better. And they're not going to grow out of this. That's unfortunately something parents still get told. And there's not no hope for them. For kids who are really disabled, really hobbled by this, there's so many possibilities to help their brains and bodies function better. And this can also work really beautifully with the other usual therapies these kids get. Once the brain has kind of the physiological platform it normally gets, and you combine that with rehabilitative therapies, things move very quickly for these kids. Many parents have found they don't need the speech therapy they used to have. They don't need the ABA therapy, or life gets easier. Their kids start sleeping. Their kids are not eloping. You know, life gets easier.
This question may be a little bit complicated, but tell me one event in which you recommended a change in the diet of a child that kind of relates to some of what you're saying, and you saw a change of that kind.
I've had the pleasure of seeing this many, many, many times, but one of the first times really stands out for me. This little boy was 3. Mm-hmm. He was low functioning, nonverbal, had autism with a really large head circumference, which is typical. And there's a body of data and work underneath why that happens to these kids and how that's related to their lack of language, their aphasia. So one of the things we found was this child was not digesting and absorbing gluten and casein normally, or soy. And this was probably around 2002 or so. So this is many years ago. So we remove those and replace them with much better food. It has to be, you can't just pull those things out and give your kids starchy food. There's a whole bunch of other nutrition deficits you got to make sure you're replenishing. And at the same time, we corrected the infections this boy had in his gut. And he came in the next time. I never even knew that he noticed me. And he just walked in and said, "Hello, Miss Judy." And I just fell out of my chair. And his mom was so happy. She was starting to cry. And she said, "You know, the bus driver who knows him really well, he goes off to his little special program. He pulled up, opened the door, and he said the same thing. He knew the bus driver's name. He said hello, and he climbed on the bus." And everyone assumed this little boy was just not aware of all these things. Well, he's aware of everything. They're taking it all in all the time, mm-hmm. and just they can't express or relate. Mm-hmm. And once you remove some of these impediments physiologically, boy, they're just so in there. They're so sharp.
Wow. How long before those changes were apparent?
It only took, oh gosh, about a month.
Wow.
Him to kind of do the, you know, and then from there, kids need to make up for a lot of lost time. Mm-hmm. And every child has a different pace. And there's some kids who don't do very well with, and there's all kinds of diets now. There's so many possibilities. Mm-hmm. So for listeners out there who are saying, oh God, I've heard of that stupid diet. I don't even want to, you know, there's so many other possibilities. And there are kids who don't do well with that. And what that usually means is more investigation is needed. And you're going to find there's something different that child needs. So, and in fact, I go into a lot of detail on that in that book, the Special Needs Kids Eat Right book.
Thank you for the segue, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you next. So you have a book, you just said it, Special Needs Kids Eat Right. How did it start for you as an idea that this book needed to be written?
Well, it's funny, when my son was born in 1996 and he had so many problems for feeding and just nothing normal was going on. And I, of course, took him to the doctor and they just kept shrugging like, well, this is just your first baby. You're just nervous. And I'm like, no, that this is not. Yes, it's my first baby, but this is so not what babies do. I mean, he basically couldn't sleep. He couldn't eat and he couldn't poop. And that's pretty much what they need to be doing when they're tiny. So at that moment, I said, I have to write this down someday because I'm not, there's no way I'm the only mom in this boat. So that kind of idea was always in my head and it did lead to me having this practice. But years later, I literally got a call out of the blue from a publisher asking, we need this book and would you like to do it? And I was like, absolutely. This is nobody's written this. That book came out in 2009. It would be fabulous. I haven't had time, but it would be great to do a new edition because there is, again, already so much new information.
So what is this book about specifically?
So Special Needs Kids Eat Right, it's strategies for kids on the autism spectrum to focus, learn, and thrive. Mm-hmm. So no matter where you're at, if you want to know anything at all about can food, nutrients, supplements, any of this matter for my kid, pick up this book and it kind of takes you through the sequence. If you want to do this, this is the approach you need to take. There has to be a certain sequence. There has to be certain things assessed first. Don't just go in blind. Mm-hmm. Here's the pitfalls. Here's the mistakes. Don't do these. Do this instead. So, and it's just very specific. Everything from what are all these lab tests people talk about? What do they mean? What are the supplements and there's thousands of supplements, so I can't possibly go over in all of them, but it gives you kind of a good thorough primer on how this works, this whole idea, and why it can work.
So in your book, you talk about the gap. What do you mean with the gap? And what is that in this day and age?
What I'm talking about there is this gap between how healthy you really can be and what kind of our insurance world and health insurance companies and all this sort of accept as good health. It's really, their version is really, well, you're not sick. You're not in the emergency room. You're not in a hospital bed. Where I think most of us would like the version where we have energy, we have vitality, and we're reaching potential where we get to grow up and function. So there's that gap there. And I think what's troubling for me is that even though I've been at this now for quite a few years, it's almost as though that gap has widened, hasn't gotten smaller. We have more kids in the U.S. now who are either sick or chronically disabled or with a chronic condition than not. So it's literally the new normal to be sick and disabled if you're a child in the U.S., which is horrifying. I mean, I wasn't like that when I was a kid. And I think young parents now are just kind of so indoctrinated into this idea that their babies have to have reflux medicine and they have to have, they don't sleep and they're crying all the time and they have eczema and that's normal. Well, none of those things are normal. And they're all indicative of problems that's going on in your baby's body. And I think they're very common and we're confusing common with normal. That's where this gap is. I think we have to go back to remembering what normal was for kids a couple decades ago. Things have really changed in the last few decades. And I think it's had really negative effects on the health of our kids. But we've got a healthcare system that kind of rubber stamps that and says, it's okay, we got medicine for that. And you know what? It's not working very well. not working very well.
So the gap is in education, would you
say? Yeah, I think you could say that. In fact, one of the blogs I put up a while ago, a few years ago, was about how exactly this, that pediatricians don't take training in nutrition. That's not required for them in the United States. They might have some very cursory study of it, but even if you're becoming a pediatric gastroenterologist, you don't need to do a lot of time studying nutrition, nutritional biochemistry, or how to manage problems nutritionally. Of course, you're taught surgery, you're taught which drugs to use, and that's great, that has a place. But what's happened, to my observation, is kids are moved immediately to those options when they don't get a chance to use less invasive and probably much healthier options. And a big example that I run into a lot more often now than I did 10 years ago is feeding tubes inserted in kids' stomachs. So when they aren't gaining and growing well, rather than really looking, there's a lot of things you can investigate there. I meet these children where that's bypassed and they're just told to be put on a tube, or they're on a tube. And once they get on these tubes, it's not easy for them to get off. And it's very invasive into your lifestyle. You have a pump running all night, pumping food into your child's belly. And it's kind of sold now as an easy answer for parents. That's the feedback I've gotten from some parents, which is really alarming to me that we're normalizing that too. So gap in education, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
In a nutshell, what are some of the diets that are commonly recommended in your opinion? And what results have you seen? I know we spoke a little bit about that, but I'm talking about just in general. What are some of those diets that are out there? You kind of touched a little bit upon them.
Right. Oh my gosh, there's so many of them. And I work with all of them and I love to meet parents where they are. So I'll have a parent come in and say, I'm on the GAPS diet. I do GAPS. I love GAPS. That's gut and psychology syndrome, where you are basically removing a lot of grains. You're using very whole fermented foods. The problem is I've met many kids who fail on that. It's a really challenging diet. That's one of them. Another one is SCD. It's specific carbohydrate diet. That one's actually been nicely peer reviewed for arresting Crohn's disease symptoms in kids. Another very challenging diet, but we can work that. And it also eliminates pretty much all grains and certain starches that are harder for your intestine to digest. Gluten-free diets, gluten and casein milk-free diets, gluten, casein, and soy-free diets. Those proteins all they're all pulled apart by similar enzymes in the gut. So there's a lot of crossover there. If a child has trouble with gluten, they probably might also with soy. This is where I hear parents saying, oh, I tried a gluten-free diet, didn't do any good. Well, there are probably other foods that you didn't know were in the mix. Paleo diets, I actually do use those for kids, and they can work. You do just have to manage them very carefully because kids are growing. They're not little adults, and their needs are very different than ours in terms of energy and the kinetics of energy in their cells. So growth is everything for these kids, and our bodies will prioritize around that. So that's why these diets, it's great if you can have monitoring and help to really build it out right for your kid. I've also used ketogenic diets. So those are diets that have actually been around for a long, long time to control seizures. And I've had some patients who've had really intractable seizure problems, failing on medicines or not the success they need, who do succeed with a ketogenic diet. And in that diet, you really restrict, you may know, all the carbohydrates. You eat just a few grams. And normally a kid might eat anywhere from 150 to 200 grams of carbohydrate a day to maybe even 300, depending on if they're athletic and a little older. Where on a ketogenic diet, you might, if you get 60 grams, that's kind of a lot. You might be as low as 30. And so there's all kinds of promising things out there to work with.
So I'm sure that, of course, each child is individually assessed by you before you recommend a diet. I'm wondering if you have noticed somewhat of a pattern as far as children or kids that are diagnosed with autism in a specific type of disorder or issue or diet that they respond better to.
Yeah, for sure. I hate everyone's going to roll their eyes, but yeah, gluten. Gluten is a baddie for those kids. Mm-hmm. And they're is a lot of interesting research behind that. This isn't just mythology. It's valid. Gluten, dairy protein, casein is tough for these kids. Soy is tough for these kids. So that's the basic. I don't still don't recommend that as a blanket thing for all kids just because they walk in if they have that diagnosis. I still want to investigate their issues. There's little flavors of it that are different for everyone. But I would say that although I have some kids on the spectrum who don't eat gluten but do eat dairy, whatever, I would say they generally do better, a lot better, if they stay away from gluten, dairy, and soy.
Feel free to elaborate on that, because I know that gluten is a big thing right now. And there seems to be greater and greater public awareness of the need. Mm-hmm. But then again, there's also controversy, because there are some people that say, oh, that's not real. And just like you mentioned. And so expand a little bit more on that.
So let me put it this way. We make antibodies to things, right, to fight them, right? We're not supposed to make any antibodies to food. That's supposed to be benign. For whatever reasons, we can end up with an antibody that attacks wheat, and specifically that attacks something called gliadin, which is a very small subparticle of that wheat protein, gluten being the wheat protein. You can measure that if there's a gliadin antibody response. There is a lot of data, it's not new, on what's called cross-reactivity with brain tissue. So if, let's say I'm eating wheat, and I don't know I have a sensitivity to it, this would not be an allergy. This would be a sensitivity, a gliadin antibody. That gliadin molecule looks a little bit like some of our own brain tissue. So the antibody is not discerning enough in many cases and will start attacking brain tissue, myelin, cerebellar tissue. And there's a lot of documentation on this in the literature. And you can see people will improve on a gluten-free diet.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for joining us today on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Judy Converse. Judy holds a master's degree in public health nutrition from the University of Hawaii and a bachelor's degree in food science and human nutrition from the University of Vermont. She is also the author of the book, Special Needs Kids Eat Right. If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387, extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. Please join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for part two of our interview here on Lifestyle Improvement.